chapter 23, applicability of Keynes's theory to underdeveloped countries, page 175. Introduction. The Keynesian theory is not applicable to every socio-economic setup. It only applies to advanced democratic capitalist economies. As Schumpeter wrote, practical Keynesianism is a seedling which cannot be transplanted into foreign soil. It dies there and becomes poisonous before it dies. But left in English soil, the seedling is a healthy thing and promises both fruit and shade. All this applies to every bit of advice that Keynes ever offered. Note 1. J. A. Schumpeter, 10 Great Economists, opposite page 275. Before we study the applicability of Keynesian economics to underdeveloped countries, it is essential to analyze the assumptions of Keynesian economics vis-à-vis the conditions prevailing in underdeveloped economies. Keynesian assumptions and underdeveloped countries. The Keynesian economics is based on the following assumptions which limit its applicability to underdeveloped countries. 1. The Keynesian theory is based on the existence of cyclical unemployment which occurs during a depression. It is caused by deficiency in effective demand. Unemployment can be removed by an increase in the level of effective demand. But the nature of unemployment in an underdeveloped country is quite different from that in a developed country. In such economies, unemployment is chronic rather than cyclical. It is not due to lack of effective demand, but it is the result of deficiency in capital resources. Apart from chronic unemployment, underdeveloped countries suffer from disguised unemployment. Keynes was concerned with the removal of involuntary unemployment and the problem of economic instability. So he did not refer to disguised unemployment in its solution. The remedy for chronic and disguised unemployment is economic development, in which Keynes paid no attention at all. Thus, the Keynesian assumptions of cyclical unemployment and economic instability are hardly tenable in an underdeveloped economy. 2. The Keynesian economics is a short period analysis in which Keynes takes as given the existing skill and quantity of available labor, the existing quantity and quality of available equipment, the existing technique, the degree of competition, the tastes and habits of the consumer, the disutility of different intensities of labor, and of the activities of supervision and organization, as well as social structure. Note 2. J. M. Keynes, opposite, page 245, note 1. The development economics, however, is a long period analysis in which all the basic factors assumed by Keynes as given change over time. 3. The Keynesian theory is based on the assumption of closed economy, but underdeveloped countries are not closed economies. They are open economies in which foreign trade plays a dominant role in developing them. Such economies primarily depend on the exports of agricultural and industrial raw materials and the import of capital goods. Thus, the Keynesian economics has little relevance to underdeveloped countries in this respect. 4. The Keynesian theory assumes an excess supply of labor and other complementary resources in the economy. This analysis refers to a depression economy where the industries, machines, managers and workers, as well as consumption habits, are all there, only waiting to resume their temporarily suspended functions and roles. Note 3. A. O. Hirschman, The Strategy of Economic Development, page 54. But in underdeveloped economies, there is no temporary suspension of economic activity. Economic activity is static. Capital, skills, factors, supplies and economic infrastructure are woefully lacking. Page 176. 5. Moreover, it can be inferred from the above assumption that labor and capital are unemployed simultaneously, according to the Keynesian analysis. When labor is unemployed, capital and equipment are also not fully utilized, or there is excess capacity in them. But this is not so in underdeveloped countries. When labor is unemployed, there is no question of capital being unutilized because there is acute shortage of capital and equipment. The Keynesian tools and underdeveloped countries. Thus, the assumption on which the Keynesian theory is based are not applicable to the conditions prevailing in underdeveloped countries. We now study the principal tools of the Keynesian theory to test their validity to underdeveloped countries. 1. Effective demand. Unemployment is caused by the deficiency of effective demand, and to get over it, Keynes suggested the stepping up of consumption and non-consumption expenditures. In an underdeveloped country, however, there is no involuntary unemployment but disguised unemployment. Unemployment is caused not by lack of complementary resources. The concept of effective demand is applicable to those economies where unemployment is due to excess savings. In such a situation, the remedy lies in stepping up the levels of consumption and investment through various monetary and fiscal measures. But in an underdeveloped economy, income levels are extremely low and the propensity to consume is very high and savings are almost nil. All efforts to increase money incomes through monetary and fiscal measures will, in the absence of complementary resources, lead to price inflation. Here, the problem is not one of raising the effective demand, but one of raising the levels of employment and per capita income in the context of economic development. The economic progress consists of two distinct categories. One, where at the given level of economic development, you move from low employment to full employment, and the other, where you move from full employment at a given level of economic development to full employment at the next higher level of economic development. The Keynesian thesis applies only to the first category. Note 4. V. K. R. V. Rao, Essays in Economic Development, opposite page 61, italics mine. 2. Propensity to consume. One of the important tools of Keynesian economics is the propensity to consume, which highlights the relationship between consumption and income. When income increases, consumption also increases, but by less than the increment in income. This behavior of consumption further explains the rise in saving as income increases. In underdeveloped countries, these relationships between income, consumption, and saving do not hold. People are very poor, and when their income increases, they spend more on consumption goods because their tendency is to meet their unfulfilled wants. The marginal propensity to consume is very high in such countries, whereas the marginal propensity to save is very low. The Keynesian economics tells us that when the MPC is high, the consumer demand output and employment increase at a faster rate with the increase in income. But in an underdeveloped country, it is not possible to increase the production of consumer goods due to the scarcity of cooperant factors when consumption increases with the rise in income. As a result, prices rise instead of a rise in the level of employment. 3. Saving. On the saving side, Keynes regarded saving as a social vice, for it is excess of saving that leads to a decline in aggregate demand. Again, this idea is not applicable to underdeveloped countries because saving is the panacea for their economic backwardness. Capital formation is the key to economic development, and capital formation is possible through increased savings on the part of people. Underdeveloped countries can progress by curtailing consumption and increasing saving, as opposed to Keynesian view of raising consumption and reducing saving. To underdeveloped countries, saving is a virtue and not a vice. 4. Marginal efficiency of capital. According to Keynes, one of the important determinants of investment is the marginal efficiency of capital. There is an inverse relationship between investment and MEC. When investment increases, the MEC falls, and when investment declines, the MEC rises. This relationship is, however, not applicable to underdeveloped countries. In such economies, investment is at a low level and the MEC is also low. This paradox is due to the lack of capital and other resources, small size of the market, low demand, high costs, underdeveloped capital and money markets, uncertainties, etc. All these factors keep the MEC, that is profit expectations, and investment at a low level. Page 177. 5. Rate of interest. The rate of interest is the second determinant of investment in the Keynesian system. It is in turn determined by liquidity preference and the supply of money. Of the motives for liquidity preference, the transactions and precautionary motives are income elastic and they do not influence the rate of interest. It is only the demand for money for the speculative motive that affects the rate of interest. In underdeveloped countries, the liquidity preference for transactions and precautionary motives is high and for the speculative motive low. Therefore, liquidity preference fails to influence the rate of interest. The other determinant of the interest rate is the supply of money. According to Keynes, increase in the supply of money lowers the interest rate and encourages investment, income, and the level of employment. But in underdeveloped countries, an increase in the supply of money leads to the rise in prices rather than to the fall in interest rate. As Keynes himself observed in citing India's example, the history of India at all times has provided an example of a country impoverished by a preference for liquidity amounting to so strong a passion that even an enormous and chronic influx of the precious metals has been insufficient to bring down the rate of interest to a level which was compatible with the growth of real wealth. Note 5. J.M. Keynes, General Theory, page 337. Thus, the rate of interest in underdeveloped countries is not influenced so much by the demand for and the supply of money as by traditions, customs, and institutional factors. 6. The multiplier. Dr. V.K. R.V. Rao has analyzed the feasibility of applying the Keynesian multiplier theory and policy implications to an underdeveloped country like India. Note 6. V.K. R.V. Rao opposite. According to Dr. Rao, Keynes never formulated the economic problems of underdeveloped countries, nor did he discuss the relevance to these countries for either the objective or the policy that he proposed for the more developed countries. The result has been a rather unintelligent application of Keynesian economics to the problems of underdeveloped countries. The Keynesian concept of multiplier is based on the following four assumptions. A. Involuntary employment. B. An industrialized economy where the supply curve of output slopes upwards to the right but does not become vertical till after a substantial interval. C. Excess capacity in the consumption goods industries. And D. Comparatively elastic supply of the working capital required for increased output. Given these assumptions, if we apply the multiplier theory on underdeveloped countries, the value of the multiplier will be apparently much higher than even in a developed country. We know that the multiplier depends on the size of the marginal propensity to consume. Since in an underdeveloped country, the marginal propensity to consume is fairly high, small increments of investment are likely to induce full employment much earlier than in a rich country where the marginal propensity to consume is low. This is something paradoxical and contrary to facts. For the assumptions on which the multiplier theory is based do not hold valid in the case of an underdeveloped country. Let us test them in the light of conditions prevailing in an underdeveloped country like India. A. Involuntary unemployment in the Keynesian analysis is associated with a capitalist economy where the majority of workers work for wages and where production is more for exchange than for self-consumption. According to Professor Das Gupta, the organized sector of an underdeveloped economy with its large-scale industries and fairly well-developed banking system comes under the scope of Keynesian economics, for it presents the features of a capitalistic economy. But involuntary unemployment in this sector is insignificant when considered in relation to the total working population of the country. As per Professor Dasgupta's rough estimate, involuntary unemployment in India works out to be 0.2% of the total working force, on the assumption that 10% of the persons employed in organized industry are involuntarily unemployed and that hardly 2% of the total working population is absorbed by the organized industry. Note 7. A.K. Dasgupta, Planning and Economic Growth, pages 32-33. In fact, in an overpopulated, underdeveloped country, there exists disguised unemployment. Ostensibly, people are engaged in agriculture, but if some of them are withdrawn from the farm, there will be no reduction in the output. In an underdeveloped country, the existence of disguised unemployment instead of involuntary unemployment hinders the working of the multiplier theory. The secondary, tertiary, and other effects of the initial increment do not follow mainly because there is no labor force willing to accept employment at the current wage level. Page 178. The disguised unemployment are not available at the current wage level because, firstly, they are not conscious of the fact that they are unemployed, and secondly, they are already receiving a real income which gives them at least as much satisfaction as they would get from the current wage level. Thus, the absence of involuntary unemployed and the presence of disguised unemployment in underdeveloped countries retard the operation of the multiplier towards increasing output and employment. B. The supply curve of output in an underdeveloped country is inelastic, which renders the working of the multiplier all the more difficult. The reason is that the nature of the consumption goods industries is such that they are unable to expand output and offer more employment. The main consumption goods industry in an underdeveloped country is agriculture, which is almost stagnant. The supply curve of agricultural output is backward sloping, so that an increase in the value of output does not necessarily lead to an increase in the volume of output. This is because in the short run, necessary facilities are not available to the agricultural producers for increasing output. As a result, the secondary, tertiary, and other increases in income, output, and employment do not come about with an initial increment of investment. The primary increase in income is spent on food and its multiplier effect is lost. C. Since the marginal propensity to consume is high in underdeveloped countries, the increased income is spent on self-consumption of food products by the farmers, which leads to a reduction of marketable surplus of food grains. This in turn leads to a rise in the prices of food grains in the non-agricultural sector without a rise in the aggregate real income. The possibility of spending more by the agriculturists on non-agricultural goods is, however, limited because there is little excess capacity in industries. D. Output is difficult to increase due to non-availability of sufficient raw materials, capital equipment, and skilled labor. Thus concludes Dr. Rao, the primary increase in investment and therefore increase in income and employment leads to a secondary and a tertiary increase in income, but not any noticeable increase in output or employment, either in the agricultural or in the non-agricultural sector. Note 8. V.K.R.V. Rao, opposite page 41. Thus, the absence of conditions C and D in an underdeveloped country renders the operation of the multiplier difficult. Conclusion. The obvious conclusion is that the Keynesian principle of multiplier does not operate in an underdeveloped country like India, mainly due to two reasons. Firstly, involuntary unemployment of the Keynesian type is not found. And secondly, the supply of agricultural and non-agricultural output is inelastic due to the working of certain factors peculiar to such economies. 7. Policy measures. Not only this, even the Keynesian policy prescriptions are hardly tenable under the conditions prevailing in underdeveloped countries. Dr. Rao maintains that an attempt to increase investment through deficit financing leads to an inflationary rise in prices rather than to an increase in output and employment. He is therefore of the view that the economic policy of deficit financing and disregard for thrift advocated by Keynes for securing full employment does not apply in the case of an underdeveloped country. But in another essay, he contends that deficit financing for capital formation does not lead to inflation, since it is used for increasing the capacity and thereby imparting elasticity to the supply curve of output. However, a certain measure of price rise is inevitable, but it is of a self-liquidating character. He points out that the history of war finance shows that forced savings obtained through a rise in prices when used for capital formation are nothing but deficit financing for economic development. The only question is the extent to which it is wise to resort to deficit financing, and the obvious answer is that deficit financing should not be resorted to beyond the point at which it becomes inflationary. Professor Dasgupta advocates the use of Keynesian policy of public investment to achieve a higher standard of living and to provide increasing employment opportunities in underdeveloped countries. But in the absence of adequate public savings and the flow of foreign capital, he advocates deficit financing, which, if not accompanied by a system of price and capital issue controls, in the transitional period will lead to inflationary rise in prices. He, however, emphasizes that we would be deceiving ourselves if we thought that the process could function within the framework of a liberal economy, such as Keynes sought so anxiously to preserve. Note 10, A. K. Dasgupta, opposite page 37. For underdeveloped countries, the old-fashioned prescription of work harder and save more still seems to hold as the medicine for economic progress. Note 11, V.K.R.V. Rao, opposite. Than the Keynesian hypothesis that consumption and investment should be increased simultaneously. Page 179. But it cannot be denied that though the Keynesian policy prescriptions do not apply in toto to the problems of underdeveloped countries, yet the Keynesian tools of analysis are indispensable for understanding the problems of such economies. To conclude with Professor Dasgupta, whatever the generality of the general theory may be in the sense in which the term general was used by Keynes, the applicability of the propositions of the general theory to conditions of an underdeveloped economy is at best limited. Note 12, A.K. Dasgupta, opposite page 34. Selected readings. A.K. Dasgupta, Planning and Economic Growth, Chapter 2. V.K.R.V. Rao, Essays in Economic Development, Chapter 2. Exercises. Question 1. What assumptions has Keynes made in his general theory? To what extent do you think the conditions in an underdeveloped economy affirm or refuse those assumptions? 2. Critically discuss the Keynesian theory of employment and show the extent to which its main conclusions are applicable in the case of economically underdeveloped countries. With this, we come to the end of Chapter 23. We have also reached the end of Part 3.